But Aquinas recasting it is saying, okay, yeah, there are these objective standards by which God makes things, and things live up to those standards. These ideas, these paradigms or exemplars are, but God knows things even that he hasn't made or chooses not to make. So in that sense, he's extending the notion of idea beyond the kind of original view of Plato. And in that sense, an idea that God has of some species of things, like perhaps a unicorn or something like that, it does not exemplify anything.
Yeah.
It could be an exemplar if God chose to make something that lines up with it, but if there is no such entity in the world, then it's not exemplifying anything.
Does doctrine really matter? The Apostle Paul once wrote to a young pastor named Titus, instructing him to hold firm to the trustworthy word he was taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine. Welcome to Credo Podcast, where doctrine matters and theological ideas have consequences. Here's your host, Dr. Matthew Barrett, executive editor of Credo Magazine.
Hi, friends. I'm Matthew Barrett. Welcome to the Credo Podcast, where we model faith, seeking understanding as we contemplate God with the wisdom of the great tradition. I'm research professor of theology at Trinity Anglican Seminary, and I'm also the McDonald Agape visiting scholar at the Dominican House of Studies in DC and the Thomistic Institute. And I am so excited for this conversation because if you've been following along, I've been sitting down with different Thomistic theologians and philosophers, exploring a number of different and very challenging topics. But today, I finally get to sit down with Gregory Doolan. He is none other than the Monsignor John Whipple, Associate Professor of Thomistic Metaphysics at the Catholic University of America. And he's written a book, and I think I've read it twice now.
Oh, wow.
I think I can say that, yeah. He's written a book on Aquinas. Not just any book on Aquinas, but Aquinas and on the divine ideas as exemplar causes with Catholic University of America Press. I'm so glad that you are joining me.
I'm very happy to be here, and yeah, thank you for that introduction.
Now, you weren't expecting me to ask this, but I have to start by saying, tell us, because I love the bow ties, so tell us about
The bow ties,
because I know you have more than one.
I have more than one. When I wear ties, I only wear bow ties.
Okay.
I went to an all men's high school, and you had to wear tie and jacket. And I had this great teacher there, English teacher, Mr. Hollowell. He always wore a bow tie. This is in the 80s. I'm aging myself, dating myself here. But, that was unusual back then, and I was inspired by it. So I started on occasion wearing bow ties. And then when I met my wife, she said, I like when you wear bow ties. And I said, that's it. I'm only wearing bow ties. And so that's my signature feats.
You were married.
That was before I was married. I mean, before I was married, I'd wear it, maybe once a week out of 5 days going to work. But now that's just my signature thing. My thought was at the time, it was more unusual. I think it's become on the upswing, like having beards again, trendy. But, in the 90s, 2000s, early 2000s, it was not as common. And so I thought, it's one of those things for students to say, I had this professor who always wore bow ties. So now it's a signature thing for me.
Well, one of these days, I don't know. Maybe I'll work up the courage.
There's nothing to be fearful of that. It's very easy.
Oh.
And it never gets in your way.
That's, that is a big advantage. Okay. Now that we have the bow tie out of our way, let's talk about your book. But, for some who are watching this or listening to this, maybe they've heard of divine ideas before, but maybe not. So what are they?
What are they? Okay, so the simplest way to put it is this is a way of talking about or acknowledging that God has in his mind ideas of the things that he makes. The provenance, the history, the origin of it goes back to pre-kind of godlike presentation with Plato, who wanted to argue that For all the things that we experience, we notice a multiplicity, but we also notice commonality among them. So I've got two cats at home and a dog. The cats differ from the dog, but the two cats are alike as cats, and they are genuinely alike. It's not just something that we're making up. So Plato had argued there's got to be this objective standard of what it is to be a cat, what it is to be a dog. Individual cats and dogs, those come and go, but the standard remains. And so he posited these entities, these beings that are these separate forms, he calls them, or ideas. And the reason he called them ideas isn't that any particular mind was thinking them, but that they are able to be thought. They are intelligible. So the physical dog, the physical cat, you can sense. But what it is to be a dog, what it is to be a cat, that's grasped by means of the mind. And so because these forms are intelligible, he called them ideas. Really, originally, the term is tied to the look of the thing, but he's extending it the way we say intellectually. I see what you're saying. I get what you're saying. It's intelligible. And so then the tradition moves such that by the time we get to Neoplatonists and then to Augustine, these ideas are located in the mind of God. And so what my work was examining is how Aquinas synthesizes this Platonic / Neoplatonic account of ideas and ideas located in the mind of God with the Aristotelian aspects of his thought.
Right. Now, you mentioned Aquinas, but it is fascinating that Augustine, he's thinking of all this long before Aquinas.
Sure.
I remember a long time ago, this was back when I was a college student.
Okay.
And since you mentioned the woman who became your wife, I'll mention the woman who became my wife. She actually, I was a little embarrassed because I had not read Augustine's Confessions. And she was asking some hard questions. And so finally she just said, "Here, I got you a copy."
That's excellent. Read it and answer the questions now.
That's right. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me because that set me on a whole new trajectory. But it didn't take long to notice. And then City of God, to notice Augustine is actually thinking of these divine ideas, but in the mind of God himself.
Right.
So that raises another question then. What then, if Augustine and then later Aquinas are thinking of these ideas in the mind of God, what does that have to do with, say, what you and others have called exemplar causality or exemplar causes?
Yes. So this is the Latin term, the Latinate term for what Plato had called paradigmata, paradigms. And we can think of it as like a pattern or a blueprint. So they are the standards abstractly taken. So again, to go back to my example of cats and dogs, if we acknowledge that it really means something to be a cat, it really means something to be a dog, well, then there's got to be some objective pattern. And so that these ideas are the forms or patterns in the likeness of which sensible things, physical things, and then extended just created things in general, in the likeness of which they're made.
Okay. Hi, friends. Matthew Barrett here. I'm interrupting our conversation to tell you about something quite personal to me right here in Kansas City. Did you know that I lead a school of theology called Anselm House? Anselm Fellows come together in my own home for evening prayer around a common rule of life, the Book of Common Prayer. And then we also have a meal together around a common table that cultivates virtue and the good life. And finally, we sit down for Socratic dialogue because Anselm Fellows are reading through the great tradition. Of course, we're doing all this to contemplate the beauty of our Lord. It's named after Anselm, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who so modeled faith-seeking understanding. Did you also know that many of our Anselm Fellows also receive so much of their degree through Trinity Anglican Seminary? In fact, you can receive up to 50% off and 50% of your entire degree through Trinity Anglican Seminary. It really is unprecedented. But best of all, did you also know that Anselm Fellows, they're not just coming and meeting in my home, they're also participating in the liturgy of the church here at St. Aidan's Anglican Church. In other words, their education is fully integrated with the sacramental theology and life of the church. It really is wonderful. I can tell you this from experience. It's one of a kind. Why don't you come to Kansas City? Join us. Become an Anselm Fellow. Go to theanselmhouse.com, theanselmhouse.com. There you will find an application. Send it in. We'd love to consider it. And we'd love to see you here in Kansas City as an Anselm Fellow. Now, I can imagine the student's hand going up at the back of the classroom saying, Professor, are all divine ideas exemplar causes?
Good. So this is where Aquinas, I'm not going to say he departs from Augustine or that tradition, but certainly going back to Plato. Plato is positing these as genuine, these forms, these ideas as genuine entities in their own right. And whether a species goes extinct or whatever, that idea or form still exists. And at some point in the timeline, it's going to exemplify itself.
Oh.
But Aquinas recasting it is saying, okay, yeah, there are these objective standards by which God makes things. And things live up to those standards, these ideas, these paradigms or exemplars. But God knows things even that he hasn't made or chooses not to make. So in that sense, he's extending the notion of idea beyond the kind of original view of Plato. And in that sense, an idea that God has of some species of things, like perhaps a unicorn or something like that, It does not exemplify anything.
Yeah.
It could be an exemplar if God chose to make something that lines up with it. But if there is no such entity in the world, then it's not exemplifying anything. Mm. So we wouldn't use that language.
Yeah. Okay. So you've mentioned Plato. But what about Aristotle? Because Aristotle talks a lot about these four causes.
Correct.
And how are those... How do we understand those in light of an exemplar cause?
So we've got these Aristotelian four causes, which Aristotle discerns inductively from looking at things in the world, experientially, that is to say. And so he observes that a thing like my dog is surely material. And so we kind of first suss out what he means by cause here, because when we think of cause nowadays, people's minds tend to default to what Aristotle would call the efficient cause, the maker or the producer. So what caused the dog? Well, its parents. Okay, but that's one kind of cause. Really, the way Aristotle is using the language of what we translate cause is to say an account that explains why one thing is dependent upon another. And so there's different kinds of relations of dependence. So surely the dog depended on his parents to bring him into existence, but he also depends on the material parts in him. So that's the material cause. Take away his matter, his body, and there ain't no dog. So you need the matter. And by that stretch of the word cause, we say, okay, he's dependent on his material parts. But Aristotle would say he's not just a heap of matter, because even though a dog has many of the same kinds of material parts that a cat might have, it's organized in a different way. And so this is where we get the language of form. So the Platonic notion of form, which is this separate exemplar pattern accounting for the dogness of the dog, Aristotle is saying that's baked right into the dog. That is this inner organizing structure of the matter. When the dog dies, the matter is not formed in a dog way, and we shouldn't go looking for where is that form, because just as the shape of a clay ball doesn't exist apart from the clay if you mush it into a cube, so too the dogness of the dog, by Aristotle's estimation, doesn't exist apart from the dog. So we got the material cause, the formal cause, the efficient cause I've noted, and then the final cause, which is the end or goal on one hand of the maker. So his parents do what dogs do in the springtime. It, even if it's according to their nature, according to their form, we could say today, according to instinct, they act not randomly, but for the goal of there being another dog, continuation of the species. And the dog acts in accord with its form to do doggy things. Yeah. It acts for an end. So where does exemplarism fit in here? Well, Aristotle himself will acknowledge that formal causality isn't always intrinsic. When an artisan makes something, he makes something in accord with the plan in his mind. Think of an architect. So whether he externalizes it with a blueprint and then the house has to be made like that blueprint, or whether it's just entirely in his mind, that pattern is extrinsic from the thing that's going to have the intrinsic form. But Aristotle did not extend this artistic analogy to the divine. If we look just at a face value reading of his work, The Metaphysics, it seems as though his God is not a creator God, is not even an efficient cause. Yeah. He moves the world as this object of desire. It is an intellectual being, but if we do a face value reading of Aristotle, what this being knows is the highest thing. Anything other than that would be beneath this being. So you kind of get this picture of a God who knows only himself. Whereas in the later Neoplatonic tradition, they try to synthesize this teaching of a God that knows itself, but somehow knowing itself, because, you know, unlike Aristotle, they're going to say the first cause produces the world. Wow. In knowing itself, it knows all the things that it can produce. And Aquinas is following in that tradition. So he's saying, you know, God makes everything like himself. In a way, God is the exemplar of all things. Not that he's making things in a one-to-one ratio, right, but to varying degrees, reflecting his infinite perfection, but in finite ways.
Okay. Well, that will take us to our second conversation, okay, which I'm eager to get to, because we're going to get into some of the nuances in what you just said with these ideas, divine simplicity, the likeness of God, and so on. But before we end, if someone's watching this or listening to this and they're thinking, okay, I'm going to go pick up that book, but where do I go in Aquinas himself? Yeah. Where would you send them as maybe a first stop?
Well, a very nice, simple presentation of it that's straightforward and not, you know, very lengthy would be in his work, The Summa Theologiae, sometimes known as The Summa Theologica. In the first part, Prima Pars, question 15, he addresses the divine ideas.
Now you can fill up on theology each day by visiting credomag.com. There you will find the latest issues of Credo Magazine with articles on key doctrines of the faith and regular video interviews with Dr. Matthew Barrett, where he answers some of the toughest theological questions of our day. Be sure to subscribe to Credo Podcast to join the conversation, a conversation where doctrine matters.